Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Hello, folks, and welcome to The Hang. Today, I am hanging with the incredible Trinidadian soprano, Janine DeBeek. I've been fortunate enough to get to know Janine over the initial lockdown we had back in the spring of 2020. When I heard Janine singing on one of her Instagram posts, it was one of those moments I'll never forget. I had to watch it over and over again. I have never heard anything like it. She is, without a doubt, one of our greatest voices on planet Earth today. Now, whilst I believe Janine has a natural gift that goes above and beyond, perhaps even unexplainable, she has also put in a tremendous amount of work, dedication, and grit to get to where she is at today. What's even more endearing is that work ethic continues. Janine does not rest on her laurels, and she does it with an infectious joy and energy that can inspire us all. I am so grateful I've had the chance to have Janine on The Hang. Welcome to The Hang, Janine DeBeek. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good. I was very excited to finally do this with
you. Meet you.
And see you. We've spoken on the phone several times over this, past 10 months?
Yeah, since... Maybe April. Wow. And this is the first time I'm actually seeing you speaking.
It's crazy. The crazy world we're living in right now.
Yeah.
Do you think, had there been no pandemic, you would have been in London by now? For any reason?
No, not particularly. I don't think I had anything scheduled. I don't remember having anything scheduled to be in London right now. The only reasons I would have come to London is normally when I transit and go to see my sister in Yorkshire.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
Because you've been, I don't want to say stuck because it's a beautiful place to be, but you're in Switzerland.
Right, so I was stuck in Switzerland because I was doing a production there in February. March, we were supposed to have our premiere. And we were like 1 week, 1 week to premiere, and then the government decided to close everything. Actually, Switzerland was as you probably know, Switzerland was like one of the last countries to decide to go into lockdown. They were very late to the game, hesitant to shut everything down, and then finally they did. So it was a choice of either going back home to Barbados, or I had the opportunity to stay in Switzerland, which we thought was just going to be like a month.
Yeah.
And then it just kept going and going and going. And eventually I was there February, March, April, May, June, July, August. Yeah, almost 6 or 7 months.
Wow.
Yeah.
Or it could have been Barbados.
But I still think that being stuck, quote unquote, stuck in Switzerland was the best option and the best choice because of how beautiful the country is. Right. Barbados is gorgeous, but to be very honest, you know, I don't think that I've ever been home for that long, actually. And going to the beach every single day, it could become monotonous. And then eventually in Barbados, they locked down. You couldn't go to the beach. You could only go to the beach for 3 hours in the morning. So,
yeah, it becomes too much of a good thing. I remember I went for pilot season out to LA and things were very quiet. So we were in Venice and Santa Monica
daily. And I was like, we're sat by the pool. And I was thinking, you would think this would be amazing, but after a while,
right.
It's like, I gotta be doing something.
Becomes like a, it becomes like a glorified jail, you know?
Yeah. So let's go back. So you were born in?
Trinidad and Tobago.
Right. What was it like growing up? How long were you there? Like, what was life like there before you mm-hmm. left? When did you leave? Were you there all the time till you decided to go to Manhattan to study?
Yes. So I was there up until the age of 20. And then I went to start studying when I was 20. So actually, I was one of the oldest in my class for undergrad when I started. And but I needed, after secondary school, I needed some time to decide what I wanted to do, because I wanted to go into law. I wanted to go into psychology. I was always doing my extracurriculars. So I was, you know, I was doing tennis. I was doing piano. I was singing. I was in choir. I was doing running. I was doing track. I was doing a lot. Trinidad is quite versatile when it comes to almost possibly everything that you would want your child to do.
Wow.
And, you know, because we're very good at sports and everything like that, the music also came because we were owned by England. We were a colony of England for so long. So we followed the same traditions as England does.
Right.
So I was doing piano and voice with Royal College of Music. But I mean, I did my exams and everything, but I'm not sure if those exams would really apply when I want it. Like if I decided to go to Royal College of Music in London or Royal Academy or Trinity College of Music. But it was still a really good way to advance in music, period.
Mm-hmm.
And but I also was doing Spanish, I was doing French. I think I was doing a lot. And I needed like a year to just be out of school and focus and decide what I wanted to do. And luckily for me, my two teachers for both voice and piano said, you know, you can advance in a career or begin a career in music. And I said, well, what's that? Like, I don't have any idea. And I'd never seen an opera. I'd seen musicals because they do versions of musicals in school, you know, and always wanted to be a part of a musical. If it's the one thing I wanted to do was to dance, sing and act, because that's what I did. And our country is so musical and we dance a lot. So the acting was just natural to come to me. So I was like, that's what I want to do. I want to sing, act, and dance. But the teachers I had were doing classical music. And they said, you can do classical singing. They didn't necessarily say opera. They just classical singing.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, I'll try it. And I auditioned for both genres. And I got accepted to do auditions in different colleges in New York because I said, okay, I want to go to New York. But none of the schools would let me do both fields, piano and voice. And I had to decide that I liked being in front of an audience and I liked having something to say
mm-hmm.
and to speak and voice my opinion or also have something to share. And to get to leave an audience feeling a certain energy from me that they can take home and feeling good, you know? And voice was that.
How advanced at piano were you at that point?
I mean, I was a soloist. I mean, I wasn't, sight reading wasn't my thing. But yeah. You give me a Debussy piece or a Chopin piece or a Tchaikovsky piece. Yeah, I would practice, and I'll be able to play it. Obvious.
So at that time, before your teachers said, you know, you can make a career out of this into music. So you were interested in it, but you just didn't know much about it because you were doing a bunch of other things like every kid should be doing, whether it's sports.
Well, I didn't understand the career aspect of it. I was like, right. What, people make a career out of this? Like, even people at home for years, I mean, really for years, people when I was at school were like, so what are you going to do with that after? You're going to teach? Like after you get a degree in music, what do you do with that? Because we don't know. what the career trajectory is of an opera singer or a solo pianist. No idea. Mm. You know, we didn't know anything about agents. We didn't know anything about, you know, possibly branching off into other genres with the same technique that you have. Nobody knows the path of how does one become a professional musician in the classical or musical theater realm at home, really. When Lion King was coming down to Trinidad, and they came to Trinidad a lot, and I know many people, many of my colleagues who end up going on these Lion King tours, and they made careers. Well, some of them are now living in Hamburg because, like, Lion King came down to Trinidad, they auditioned people, they took them back to Hamburg, and they're living there now doing Lion King. And they even went to Broadway, and they were there for a long time. But other than that, nobody knew, other than people scouting for talent, how were you going to be able to, like, have a career after that? And to this day, even if you live in first world countries like America, England, and all parts of Europe, that question is still to be answered. How do you make a career as a classical musician, an opera singer even, especially now with COVID? Because look at all these graduates that are now left school. What are they going to do because of COVID? A year of not being able to audition for anybody, or nobody's accepting new people, you know, stuff like that. So...
yeah, and you say a year, but it's still ongoing too. That's what's scary.
That's what's really scary. But I'm pretty optimistic.
We have to be, you know, otherwise it's going to be hard to wake up every day, you know. We have to keep busy, we have to keep positive. So before you got that call to, okay, I want to go audition in New York, and you entertained a couple options. Before you really got serious about classical training, what kind of stuff were you singing? How, because you never thought of it as a career, how serious were you taking yourself as a singer? Or were you just doing it because that's what you wanted to do? It was like a hobby?
Well, that's what I was being taught. You know, when I was at school, we had this huge competition. In Trinidad, we had this huge competition called the Trinidad and Tobago Music Association, mm-hmm. Music Festival. And it was a festival, a competition that garnered healthy competition amongst different school and amateur semi-professional groups, choirs. They had, you know, duets. And this is of all instruments and genres: jazz, classical, folk, calypso, everything under the sun when it came to music, right? Mm-hmm. And so my school participated, that's how I learned about it, participated, and it was a healthy rivalry between colleges, you know. And always the prestigious colleges would go up against each other. So I was in one of the top schools, and we would always go up against this other top girls' school against each other. And they'd always compare the voices of this school was a little bit more, you know, very placid sounding, very white sounding. And then this other school was more dark sounding, colorful kind of thing. And the competition always had one song that the two schools had to sing, and the judge had to decide who was the best one. Depending on the judge, one year one school won, one year the other school won, even though I'm pretty sure they both sounded great.
Right.
But I started there. And so my teachers, who were the choir, you know, the choir mistresses, my last teacher, my first voice teacher, she went to school at Royal College of Music. She came back. And so that's what she knew. So she wanted to embark that knowledge onto me. But I always saw my sisters partake in more musical theater type stuff because of the type of school that they also went to in the south of Trinidad. And that particular school combined their choir with a boys' school, and they made a show together. So there was more possibility to do love type musicals and things like that than it was in my school. So I remember when I was a kid, when I saw that, I think they were doing Phantom of the Opera, to be very honest.
Really?
I really feel like that was my, I feel like they did a Caribbeanized version of Phantom of the Opera. I don't remember what it was. I have to ask them. But I do remember, like, the fog and, like, the boat and everything. And yeah, it was, and they did everything, like, you know, the instruments that they had at the time, nothing compared to what you did, of course. But I was a baby and my eyes were like, oh my God, you know. And then all our adverts, I mean, I'm not talking so much, but all the ads in Trinidad are music based.
Right.
Okay. If you're buying Tide laundry detergent, it has a calypso beat. Dun 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 Tide. Dun 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 dun. You need to buy Tide. Like, and so every time you're like watching a show, when I was a baby, I would just jump up and be like, ad time, yeah! And so I was just always surrounded by it. But the main structure was when my teacher came and said, okay.
And you have how many sisters, you said?
Two.
And they're musical as well?
No.
No.
We all were in music. We all played piano. My middle sister was more dance, so she was ballet.
Okay.
And my elder sister was more the pianist, very, very academic. She's a doctor now, explains a lot. And to be very honest, it really does, because it aligned, math, you know, it's the way how the brain thinks. Mm-hmm. She went into science. My middle sister became a physiotherapist and she's a dancer, you know.
Amazing.
So they're both at the top of their games in their fields, and it's great. Yeah.
And your parents, were they musical at all?
So I never experienced music with my dad, but my mom played piano. And apparently when I was born, she lost her voice for like about 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was really interesting when she told me. Everybody told me that. Like, yeah, you know.
Any explanation for that? Is that something you've explored?
Everyone thinks that I took it. Or maybe she screamed so much when I was coming out. I have no idea.
Maybe.
But you know, it's a good thing for a parent to say, you know, when they're super proud of their kid and they're like, oh, she took the voice from me, you know.
Yeah, you maybe literally did do that. So this teacher inspired you to start thinking of it as a career. So at this point, track, your other academics, it's nothing that you were going to take seriously anymore. Music was for you at this point.
Yes, I think I wanted to try it, and I didn't. There were obviously obstacles, but I never saw them because my mother protected me very much from them, from that. She was always a person. We didn't have a lot of money. We didn't grow up in the richest of areas. We're a very average family. She's a single parent. Raising me, my other two sisters were already at college, so it was just, you know, her and me for quite a while. As you know, a single parent with an adolescent is not easy. I'm so sorry, mommy. And I've apologized to her many times for my past.
Well, I think she'll be proud of all three of you right now.
No, she's immensely proud.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUPS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUPS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUPSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
But, you know, it's not easy having a young daughter as an adolescent, as a single parent. and also not knowing specifically what that child wants to do. And when that child comes home and says, I want to be an opera singer, and you have you don't know what that's about, and you have no example to follow, or you have nobody to ask, all you have is God and your beliefs and your spirituality, that you, this is what my child wants to do, and we're going to see it through. So I never, to be honest, I've never had any, people always ask me if I ever had any, someone preventing me from doing it or wanting to. I never had that. I really was blessed with just people around me that just said, go, 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 and go, and go. My grandparents were there. My grandparents were teachers and principals of schools. They were mathematicians and a literature major. Why, when their granddaughter, whom they expect to be a lawyer or a psychologist or something like in the you know, their type of academic, to come in that direction, to say now they want to be an opera singer, and they have no idea what it's about, but all they just said was, okay, go, 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 go. My grandfather always had this thing, the story about the choo-choo train that was going up a hill, and it said, I think I can. And you have to keep saying that, or it kept saying that until it got to the very top, and then it went down, and it just said, it went so fast. I know I can. And he's like, you have to keep persevering till you get to the very top, until you sail, you know?
That's so amazing.
It's
all about that encouragement, right? Like you said, there was never a reason to think, well, otherwise, this, sure, just keep going.
No, as people, you know, even in Trinidad, they're like, why opera, Janine? Like, why didn't you do calypso? Why didn't you do R&B? That's what, you know, little black girls should be doing on top of that. And one friend of mine who's also an opera singer and in England, his name is Ronald Sam, a fabulous tenor, he did the interview with me, and he promptly interrupted the interview and said, why not opera? Why? Because she is a black woman from the Caribbean. Should she follow the trajectory path of others by doing calypso, by doing, you know, all those other genres? If she wants to do opera, and that's what she was introduced to, that's what she was taught, and that's what she loves. It's not to say that she doesn't know the other genres, but this is what she wants to do. So why not support that?
100%.
Why not? Why can't the country facilitate that for a lot of singers, young singers like myself, who want to go in that direction, but there's no support system for that at home, for example, or even around the world? It's a big struggle with opera singers, and the arts in general. I mean, to be honest, but particularly opera, where, you know, we're faced with a lot of adversary, especially when you're black or and when you're female. There's a lot more conflicts there that you have to overcome. The point is to overcome them, yeah, in as much as a positive way as you can, to prove that there is a space for you, you know?
Absolutely. And these obstacles, did they present themselves then at home before you left for Manhattan, or as you got to Manhattan, you found those obstacles, or both?
Well, like I said, I didn't face obstacles in that particular realm when it came to me pursuing the craft. Yeah.
Right.
When you start getting more and more versed in your craft and more, you understand more and more about yourself, and you start to become, people start to become more aware of you. That's when those questions start to come. When you're a student, nobody says anything. You know what I mean? But then when people start to notice you, they're like, okay, let's ask the hard question. Why opera, Janine? Why not this? Why not that? Why not that? And they try to play devil's advocate, and you have to stay true to yourself and be like, but why not? You know, in terms, if you're talking about the race card, I get asked that a lot too. And I have to say, in what respect? Like, you have to be specific about that kind of question. Like, did I get not hired because I'm black, or did I get hired because I'm black, or did I face problems because I'm black?
Well, I wasn't specifically regarding the race card. I was just going off the obstacles you mentioned. But if that is one of the obstacles and hurdles, then sure. How if you were presented with that, how did you overcome that?
Well, I can't say that I was directly presented with that as a as an obstacle. Mm-hmm. I can say that it has worked in my favor, actually, to get noticed somehow.
Yeah, but Janine, your voice is one of a kind as well.
Oh, thanks.
I read a quote. Your voice is full of fire and cream in equal measure.
Oh my God, that's from, where's that from? The Guardian? No.
What I wrote it down.
I think it's The Guardian.
Yeah, something like that. When I read that, because I remember when I first heard your voice was on that Instagram post. When you were in front of the graffiti and you're just in jeans and a t-shirt, this beautiful music. And look, I can't say I'm an opera aficionado. It goes over my head, but all I knew was a spirit and a soul oozing off this Instagram video that was touching my soul. I was like, I've never heard anything like this. And it was so funny how quickly we connected because of that. And how easily, when we started talking phone, I felt like I've known you for ages. You make me laugh and you're so cool to just talk to. But let's get to your training, because this is where I'll have questions as a singer myself. When you got to Manhattan, so let's just take the whole obstacle thing is, I guess you're saying whatever obstacles you were faced with, a lot of people in the opera world get that anyways, whether it's the race card or not.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay.
But I think where I don't want to interject with my experience in this at all, but there's a similarity in something that rings with me is that growing up, I was surrounded by people just going, sure, that's what you want to do. When I wanted to be the Phantom as a kid, I kept saying, I want to be the Phantom. No one said it's never going
to
happen.
Did you want to be the Phantom when you were a kid?
From 12 years old. Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I saw it and I was like, I want to do that. But because I came from a small town, nobody said no. Everyone said, cool.
Right.
Then we just carried on being kids and doing our thing.
But that's that vision board that started right there.
I so believe in that. I believe in you have to visualize it. You have to see yourself.
Yeah.
I do it now. Like this year, I don't know what this year holds, especially, look, as an actor, you never know what the year holds. Then add a global pandemic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I'm visualizing something's going to happen this year. And I don't want to get into it too much because it's not about me, but I write it down. I visualize it.
You write it down. Exactly. Yeah.
And that's
happened
a lot in my life.
Yeah.
So being Iranian in this industry too, like you, if there was obstacles, I don't know, when we have this vision of keep going forward, I can till I know I can.
No, I can.
I just put it in the pile of, it's just one of something that we just have to deal with and navigate.
Exactly.
So you're at the Manhattan School of Music? What sort of aspirations do you have at this point?
Yeah. So when I first entered, I didn't know what I was getting into. I saw my first opera when I was 21. It was Traviata at the Met with Renee Fleming. And I just fell in love with the storytelling, you know, and the story. I mean, I yelped when she died. I yelped out and my friend kicked me in the knee and was like, shh. And I was like, she's dead. You know, when Alfred was like, where is she? And I was like, she's dead. My friend was like, shh. And I was like, pff. And I was a bucket of tears. Like, and then I went to meet Renee Fleming after, and I couldn't talk. I just could not talk. I looked at her and I was like, because my teacher, she knows you. And it was so embarrassing. But But of course, if I saw Renee now, I'd be like, I probably still would not know what to say. Kind of like when I met you and I was like,
get out of here. Renee Fleming, Ramin Karimloo. It's a whole different ballgame there.
You have no idea. Okay, sidetrack. You have no idea how much when I saw, it's not even just about you. It's the fact that I finally saw the production. I had seen the production, like I said, when I was a baby, when I was like five. And I'd never, you know, it was the Caribbeanized version of Phantom of the Opera. And then it was, my sister had the cassette tape. We had a cassette tape of Crawford and, sorry, her name is Brightman.
Sarah Brightman,
We just had a cassette. Do you know what it is? And I had to keep rewinding, like reeling the tape, like, and I learned every single song. But I tell you, the part where the chandelier crashed, no idea what happened. I had no clue why all of a sudden everything went chaotic. I didn't know that the chandelier had crashed. And then it went straight into your aria for...
Musica. No.
No, no. Dum, 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 dum.
Point of no return?
Yeah, I think so. No. You came out down the stairs in red.
Oh, in a mask. So silent, good monsieur.
No idea why this was happening. But on the cassette, I was like, it just went from masquerade. And I knew none of the words. I didn't know what anybody was saying. So at that time, I was just like singing vowel sounds, you know, walking around. Masquerade, hide your face, cause of no idea what anybody was saying. So
well, I'm the like, funny part is, I'm sure there's still some people in the cast that might have that phonetic approach to that. There, those words, I don't think. There's going to be at least one person who's like, I still don't know these words.
Yeah.
When I was Raul, I didn't know all the words. It's like,
hide your face because the world will never find you. Is that what they say or something like that?
Are you always like one beat behind? Like, find you.
Like right after. And then when the opera singer comes in and that group comes in and they go, that's a boom, that's a bitch. I have no idea what they're saying, but I just was singing vowel song. And, but yeah, anyway, so my point is, it's like when I finally, this is from when I was five, I'm 30 now. So, you know, when I finally get to watch it, I watched it. My sister said, Janine, hey, you know, they're streaming it on YouTube, but you got to do it fast because you only have 24 hours. Luckily for me, Switzerland is an hour ahead, so I still had time. Mm-hmm. I watched it twice, back to back, until 5 a.m. And I went to bed and I went to my partner and I said, why did she leave? She should have left and she should have stayed. Dogs. And so I was so sad, but I was really happy that I got to see it. So then when Sierra like wrote to me, I was like, who's this girl? Like, and like I was like, let me check her out. Okay, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, wait, hang on. It's her. And then you tapped me and I was like, oh my God. I know I've told you this before, but I'm serious. It was like a super shock. It was like a super shock. So yes, you are on the level of Renee Fleming. Thank you very much in my book. I mean, that was the first time I saw an opera. And then it just took time for me to like develop, to see where I wanted to go. Because, you know, at school, they're just giving you like a lot of songs and maybe an opera here and there. They're like concentrating on the languages. Somewhere around my junior year, my voice changed. And it was like, it's like how a boy's voice like cracks or breaks and splits. So my voice changed like that in my third year. And then I was starting to get more color, but didn't have any, I didn't have any low notes much. I had a lot of high extension. And And it stayed like that for a while. I think only now within the last like 3 or 5 years, my voice switched again.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, is that a normal thing with, as people go through different stages of their life? Is that because you're using it so much? When you say it changes, is it necessarily for better or for worse, or is it just different?
It's just different. And also the technique, my technique changed because I switched teachers as well. So over the last 10 years, so a lot of development of the muscle starts growing. So when you're doing the technique right. So for many years, I was just kind of like at this level. And then when I switched teachers and you start to learn a different technique, your body is fighting against this plateau. It's kind of like a weight training. If you only had this, you know, your body plateaus after doing something the same all the time, and you have to do a change in order for the muscle to grow. So right. Now that I've changed, the muscle starts to grow and you get a bigger extension. So certain things can happen where you may not be able to reach the highest notes that you were when you were younger because you were probably just going off of sheer talent. Or because it's just not easy anymore. It could be psychological as well. But also something else happened to me where my lower register started to kick in and I had more confidence to go lower and to sing in chest voice. So like the things that you guys do in musical theater is a different mechanism for opera. But some of it I learn where you guys really speak, where you sing where you speak a lot. And we do the same thing, except we pull air back much bigger to create a fuller sound that comes, you know, in this direction and out to 5,000 people if we have to, or 3,500 maximum, you know, in a theater. Whereas you guys have a mic, and if you do that, you'd blow it out. It would be too much. And also for the genre, you know.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, because with music theater, when you do 6, 7, unless you have an alternate, it's 8 shows a week. That's almost like you're an athlete, because as you say, it's a muscle. And I don't think we should be doing 8 shows a week, although it's amazing and I love doing it, but it beats you up. Like with Jean Valjean, I don't know if I'll ever play that again, if I get the opportunity, but there's no way in hell I would do that 8 times a week. And I don't know if I can, but mentally I wouldn't want to. I'm just not going to put my body and voice through that. I never want to get to a show and think, how am I going to get through this? I don't want to just get through it. You want to be able to perform and give the audience
your all your every best. Time.
I don't want to just think, well, I have to do this to get to here, to get to there. That's why when I did it in London, we only had to do 6 a week. And I loved it because you could be full bore because you do 3 shows and you're off one, 3 shows and you're off one. So you're always full tilt. Knowing you could rest it. Broadway was tough. It was 7, which was killer anyways. But then the way the schedule landed, it was like Friday 1, Saturday 2, early Sunday morning 1. And I hated that feeling of like, I don't know how I'm going to get through this. Because then it's not about your task is only to get through it. It's not to tell the story. And I didn't like that. Because I don't want to shortchange the audience. That's why I like the idea of opera. How many would you do at most in 1 week?
In 1 week? Right now, I could be scheduled right now in Paris to do like 3 shows in 1 week maximum.
Wow. How do you feel after a show? Are you beat up? Do you feel it the next day? Or do you wake up thinking, I could do another one, but I'm glad I'm not?
Right. So that's the aim. The aim is to be able to feel that you could go on and sing the show the next day or even right after the show is done. If you're tired and vocally tired, there's something going on with the technique.
Oh.
Or the part's not for you.
We should have had this chat maybe 7, 8, 9, 10 years ago. My career would be very different. So if you feel tired.
I mean, of course you're going to feel tired. If you're using your chords for 2.5 hours, you're going to feel tired, especially physically. I pop an ibuprofen to like bring the swelling down. If I know that I have a show in another 2 days, and that's really a lot for us, But also remember, it's a different type of mechanism and singing that we're doing from you guys. So it's not possible for us to do, it's not good for us to do a show back to back or even every other day. Right. Because it is tiring. That day of rest literally has to be bodily rest. I can't exercise. I can't, because when you exercise, you get the body tired, the voice gets tired, everything gets down. That has to be a complete day of rest, at least for me. And that's kind of sad because I love to work out.
Yeah. How do you find the fitness aspect? Because I know you're very outdoorsy. I see you hiking all the time, camping outdoors. And those, from what I'm seeing on your Instagram, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Do you, when you're in a run of a show,
yeah,
and I guess you're finding time to rest, but are you still working out at some point during the run of the show for your mental health or your physical health?
Yeah. So that stopped during the last year because I was really, really busy and moving from one location to the next. And I didn't know how to, I didn't understand not being able to be at a gym, how to do the things in a hotel room or at home. I knew it, but I didn't have the motivation or the inspiration to do it. Yeah. So there's this lockdown situation I'm very grateful for to be able to get back on track with that. And once my body is in alignment with doing that, it does not prevent me from doing a performance and working out either at least 15 minutes or something that day or the day after. But a heavy workout, like to say, like I'm going to do squats the next day, you know, full lower body workout, I wouldn't do it just because of how exhausting it is because of the work that we have to do the next day with a show. So I would just be able to gauge a little bit better now mentally what I need to do on days off in shows as well as days of shows. When you don't work out a lot and sing at the same time, your body's not used to it. So singers start to get scared, especially opera singers, they start to get scared that the tension from doing a burpee, which would create, if you haven't done it for a while, tension here in the neck and in the shoulders, creates tension around the whole voice box, is the muscles around here, and you feel constricted, and that's a terrible feeling. You want to feel that this area is always, you know, nice and soft, and you know, you should get a massage before and massage here, do get a larynx massage, you know, and things like that, so that that area is loose. But if you're not used to it, it's like jumping back into fitness after you haven't worked out in like months. And you're like, yeah, I'm going to do this hardcore. I'm going to like, you know, do a, you know, a squat with 250 pounds or some crap, you know, and you feel awesome. And then you're like a newborn giraffe, like for the rest of the week. You're wobbling all over the place. You can't do anything, you know?
Yeah, so true. Well, that's interesting you say that about tension, because ever since my neck injury,
singing
has been different. Oh, I had two disc problems in my neck about maybe 2 years ago, but I still, ever since then, singing's been different. Just wear and tear. Do you know what? It all started in Phantom.
Really?
Yeah, when I was in the Angel, something went wrong and it was either fall this way towards the audience, but still harnessed,
yeah,
or snap my head back this way to not fall into the audience.
Yeah.
And since then, I have moments where there's no issues, but now I have to regularly see a chiropractor or a masseuse because I'm not doing a year-long contract, 8 shows a week, where I think that might be healthier for me, because then you can navigate. Your body gets used to it. It gets stronger. But when you do these one-off concerts or a short tour, it's like you say, you're not regularly doing it. So your body goes, what are you doing?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Because I find even my, what's that soft singing like in Bring Him Home? That sound that the singers use? Falsetto?
Falsetto.
If I'm not doing that regularly.
Oh my God, your voice like doing that at the end of. Oh my God. I think I've played that like a million times. Me and my other teacher friend were just like, how does he do that at the end of it's the last scene. Christine, I love.
Well, that was always, I kept thinking after those screams that go now and leave me. I remember every time I was like, I wonder if it's going to come out tonight because it's so husky really? At that point. But if I'm not singing that regularly and I try and use falsetto now and it's difficult, is that normal because it's not in practice? Because we're in a pandemic and we're not, maybe our spirit's not in line with singing right now because of what we're experiencing. I'm not singing regularly, so maybe the muscle's out of whack.
Why are you not singing regularly, Remy?
Well, I'm starting to do it more now. I'm forcing myself because I don't feel that. I think it's a spiritual thing. So when I go to sing, let's say, Bring Him Home Now, it doesn't sound the same. So now it's in my head. I feel like I can't sing it. I'm nervous to sing it. I'm anxious to sing it. But also,
yeah, but you got to go back into how it feels, though. You have to go back to your technical way. You cannot be listening to yourself.
And I think that comes with aligning the spirit and the body, at least for me.
Yeah.
And I guess I need a reason to sing, because now when I go, if I do any singing.
You do have a reason to sing, and your perfect reason is because you are preparing yourself for what's about to come. You have to stay ready.
100% right. And
you have to stay ready. You do not know when you're going to get that call.
You have to stay ready. And that's exactly a lot of my things I do with this 8X community is staying ready, be prepared. And for some reason, the singing is the one thing I've let go. But saying that, I've had a couple of singing things with the band. I just recorded music of the night that's going to air soon. I don't know when this will come out, so it's probably out by now. And for the first time, I thought, don't take it for granted because it's music of the night. Don't take it for granted that it's Bring Him Home or any of my own stuff with the things, with the streaming stuff. So a month prior to that, I start singing it every day. Even if I'm like forcing myself to do it, it's like, go up there and practice. Don't take it for granted. Even music of the night, because it was for a televised thing. So you're not doing the scene, but I'm still with a 60-piece orchestra. So it's not the way I sing it with my band, because that vocally comes out different when I'm sat with a guitar. You sing it differently. It's a different truth. Here, you've got a 60-piece orchestra, the London Palladium. I actually started practicing holding a mic because I thought to myself, how are you going to tell the story? Don't just sing it. And then when you get there, you now have something in your hand and you're going to be awkward. What's awkward is practicing that at home as someone my age, pretending I've got a mic in my hand. But get through that now, because then when you get there, you've done. So I'm answering my own question because I did practice and it helped. But here's the problem. We've recorded it. Now I've stopped practicing. So after this, I promise I'll practice.
I mean, I totally understand what you're saying. Like, but the thing is, for me, you do have projects coming up, right? I mean, technically, if they don't get canceled, do you have projects that are coming up?
Correct. And to my defense there, the one of them, I've started, even though it's 6 months away, I've started singing it now because I'm so nervous about that.
Well, right. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like, okay, if we don't have things that are happening right now, and that's why I keep saying you have to be ready. So, compared to, like I said, students that are exiting, have just graduated, and they have nothing, no prospects at the moment about what they are going to do. All these thousands of kids that have left conservatories and universities with a degree in music, what are they going to do now? Is the biggest question, right? That I'm sure a lot of them can answer, and I'm sure a lot of them cannot answer at the moment. But so when you compare, you know, just think about that and know that, at least for me, that's what I think about at times, is like when I just don't feel the motivation, somebody else can be ready to take my spot.
Yeah.
And then I don't get to shine the God-given light that was given to me. with people that want and need it.
So what's your practice schedule now while you wait to get back into a show? I know you started doing stuff. You're in between shows now?
Yeah, so I just finished a show in Rotterdam for New Year's, and now next week I go to Barcelona to do a concert, if it happens.
Right.
Because Barcelona and Spain is kind of a mess. Mm-hmm. But if it does happen, then I do an opera concert, which was already scheduled as a concert. It was never supposed to be a full opera anyway. So okay. We do that. And then I am learning music for a recording that's happening at the end of the month. So I'm in learning music mode that I have to okay. do, because it's happening in February, it's happening in March, you know. So things are still happening in terms of people wanting to record. That's the other thing that's nice about this pandemic, that people are, the houses and orchestras are still trying to find a way for their people to work. Mm-hmm. And the recording business is becoming is blowing up.
Yeah. And it's great that people are finding different ways to, one, be employed and make employment for people, and to still try and do what you love. So your practice right now, your staying ready, consists of learning, because you have commitments.
Learning lessons with my teacher.
So you're still doing that once a week, twice a week?
No, once I finished learning all this rap, I go to her in a month, maybe two or three times, and then I back off, and then, because I don't need to see her all the time. I teach because my more professional students, they help me understand what's going on with me, because I can correct them. And of course, right. I need to not do what it is I'm telling them not to do.
Yeah.
So it's like a self-correction for me as well, staying ready. So actually, during the first lockdown, when I wasn't practicing as much, but I was teaching like 5 hours a day, it was really almost like a 5 hour lesson to myself, because I kept repeating the same thing over and over and over and over. And it wasn't something that I wouldn't tell myself, because I don't tell my students things that I don't do myself. So, you know, it's like looking at somebody and you're like, you hate that thing that they're doing because it's something that you hate in yourself, but you don't even realize it.
Yeah, that's true. I've learned a lot like that. Because sometimes I always say, even if you don't enjoy something you're seeing, you can still learn a lot.
And you can still learn so much from it, yeah.
A lot of the stuff, half the time I'm like, I think I do that. So let's fix it.
Let's not do that.
So you teach online. Do you still take students? If people wanted to still learn from you and learn with you?
Yeah. And I'm a hard ass.
I want to book a lesson. I've never trained, so why don't I take a lesson with you? I want you to teach me how to spin and do. I want to learn an opera song.
Okay.
We'll figure out a time.
It'll be hard on you.
Please do. You know, I don't want to be rapping cotton wool.
I had two colleagues that came to me, and actually one is going to come back here in about an hour. She was so shy to ask me for a lesson. I said to her, you should sing for me sometimes. She goes, really? I mean, you would. And I was like, Georgina, of course I would listen to you. She's like, but I'll be so scared. I'm like, you're a working opera singer like me. Why wouldn't you? Yeah, because you might be too picky and too this and that. I said, well, that's the thing. You want somebody who's going to be picky, because you want to be your best self all the time when you sing.
Yeah. And you have to be uncomfortable.
You have to be uncomfortable because when you get up in front of 3,500 people and you have to sing, I mean, I know you sing for more people than that. So can you imagine? Not only that, when you start doing recordings in the studio and everything, and that stuff goes out there, there's no time to change it. You don't have to, you can't retract.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't take the recording back and be like, oops, I'm sorry. False alarm, guys. Let's retake. Like, you can't do that. Right. So, and also singing for your peers, whom you trust and respect, and getting their opinion reminds you of many things about yourself that you need to keep on doing, because it's a growing process always. I love the fact that I never stop learning. Never. I never will. You know, it's like buying the iPhone XR and then you now have to go and buy the iPhone 12. You're always going to be learning something about Apple, some new product. We have to keep up to date all the time with Instagram and social media. And are you on TikTok, by the way?
No.
Neither am I. Are you going to get on it?
I don't think so. I'm more deleting things. Like I've come off Twitter and
yeah, I don't know. Twitter.
I might use TikTok for my 8X stuff, but I'll get someone else to do that because it can be clever, but like I've got a lot going on. I don't need to spend more time with the phone in my hand. You know, I'm trying to create things and I have to now practice singing more after speaking with you. So who's got the time? I gotta be ready, Janine.
Yeah.
Me being on TikTok is not making me ready.
No, it's not. Well, there's a flip side to that I thought about with TikTok because I was just like, okay, if you want to sell an album and you want to get as much audience and a different kind of audience, we're doing several things. You're being ambassador to the music. You're trying to get people that wouldn't normally be interested in something like that interested in it. You know, it's all about sales too. Spreading what you want to spread in terms of your energy, in terms of your message, in terms of everything to everybody. It should be accessible to everyone. Why not? Right.
Well, I would do that if I had a social media, I don't know, manager.
Assistant. I know. Exactly.
Yeah, because it does take time to make it look good. Like even my little reels I started doing for my workouts. Do you know how long it takes to edit that and put the workout in and copy this? Because I also want it to look somewhat decent. Next thing you know, an hour and a half's gone by. I'm like, holy crap.
Yeah, you can spend 2.5 hours on just making a 30-second reel. It's really painful.
That's why I have a lot more respect for those who are like social media managers or media agents.
I cannot post every day. I like to leave it like 5 days or 3 days, you know. And then post.
I either leave it or then there'll be like 4 in one day, which is probably against all, like, you shouldn't do that. You should spread them out. But listen, I know I'm taking a lot of your time and we're definitely going to do this again. But just to wrap up the how to stay ready and whatnot, for someone like me, when I would just want to sing, sometimes I just want to sing with my guitar every day, let's say. Mm-hmm. Is that a form of practice or should I be diligent to actually do scales and quote unquote exercises, or is singing those songs exercises, new songs, different styles? Like right now for me, besides yourself, the best singer in the world is Chris Stapleton, this country singer. His voice is insane.
Yeah.
So I'm singing some of his stuff. You're just singing along with him. It's a whole new sound and area. But then I guess... Yeah. So my question is that a form of practice? Is that a form of
voice? I think it is a form of practice, like warming up on repertoire that you already know. Okay. Mm-hmm. You should always, look at it. Your voice is a muscle. You would never go in deciding you're going to do lower body today and not give yourself a round of 20 squats with no weight to warm up the muscle. If you go in full hardcore, and you get to the Smith machine and you're pumping, you know, however many hundreds of pounds, like right away, that's not good for the muscle, right? So you need to warm up depending on how you feel that day, lightly, slowly.
Okay.
You know, take a break, come back to it, take a break, you know, and then go hardcore. I don't warm up for more than 10 minutes. It's too long. 15 minutes is too long to warm up on something. And it just goes by how I feel that day. It applies to performance as well.
Now, can warm up be?
Lip trills, tongue flutters, just going, you know, singing a scale on ooh, singing a scale on E, you know, anything that brings the chords together.
What about just singing an easy folk song on guitar? As a warm up.
Yeah. Like I said, it's something that you know, you know,
okay.
Slowly, you know, whatever gets it going. But for me personally, before I even sing the song that I know, I go back to basics. Very, very, very basic warm up. Stop. Anything that's like getting my chords to come together, moisturize, get the larynx down, the larynx neutral and down. Because in the morning, our larynx can be so high up.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why they say, you know, drink warm things to like really get this down. Get the massage this area, get this down. Massage your neck, get that down. Notice what's happening in your body. It's not, singing is not just about your chords. It's about what, how your whole body feels. Wouldn't it be better to be able to sing using a much larger organism called your body rather than just this, the two vocal cords that come together and they're so fragile? You mm-hmm. stress your chords like that, and you have to be careful about nodules and all of that stuff. It's slow. You know?
How do you know if you have a nodule or a polyp?
How do you know? I have no idea. Wouldn't you? I mean, if you know, if you feel something, and then you go to the doctor.
Do you often go get your vocal cords checked out of just making sure everything's fine?
No, not often. Only when I feel something's about to happen or is going wrong.
So if people want to get in touch with you to get some lessons, online
yeah.
lessons, through your website, through how should they get a hold of you?
Shy, I'm so shy. they can email me, Janine Lessons. That's easy. Janine Lessons.
Janine Lessons at
Gmail.
gmail.com. That's
yeah.
what I'm going to email.
You have my number, Ravi. You can just text.
Sounds good. Okay, I'm going to wrap it up by asking two quick questions. But honestly, Janine, there's so much more we're going to talk about. I know people are going to love listening to you talk, and you're going to hear from them, but we're going to have you back because I just love spending time with you anyways.
Yeah, because I want to talk about
purpose.
I need to get it. Yeah, I'm with my trainer now online. She's kicking my
I saw she's from Barry's Bootcamp, right?
Yeah, Jen. Oh, my God.
Janine, you are as fit as they come, but I know it's down to – I know you have to feel good about yourself. So
yes.
I found that inspiring that what you're doing, you're being ready and you're being better than yesterday. So you're super inspiring.
That's it. That's all we can do at this point. So.
Correct. Two quick questions. First one, what made you smile yesterday?
Oh my God. Several things. I have to pick one.
Just the first one that comes to your mind.
I talked to a friend of mine that we were madly in love 10 years ago. And we started talking again, and he makes me laugh all the time. So I'm happy when he calls.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, hopefully he'll call more often then.
Ah, we see. We don't know.
And I'm sure, because we've spoken about it, what's the first childhood memory that comes to your mind that puts a smile on your face?
The first thing that came to mind is what we were talking about earlier, was me sitting down watching TV and then getting super excited when an advertisement came on about laundry detergent to Calypso Interior, and I got up and danced in front of the television for my whole family's enjoyment.
I can't wait. I'm going to find this Tide Calypso commercial.
Well, it was not Tide. It's called Breeze, and it Breeze.
Breeze.
If you go on YouTube and maybe search Breeze advertisement Trinidad and Tobago, you'll see several different versions.
I think I'm
gonna look it up now.
Janine, I think you're amazing.
Thanks.
I know we've only just touched the surface of your story, but I just wanted to hang with you and not necessarily have a specific focus. But what you've given about voice and vocal training, your state of mind over the obstacles you were faced growing up, whether they were ones that only you would have experienced or all of us experienced, that state of mind, that just straightforward motion, I think I can, to the point where you were able to say, I know I can.
Yeah.
I think everyone can take something from that. And I just think you're incredible.
Thank you. You too.
You are one of the greatest singers on planet Earth right now.
Oh, stop. Okay,
and
say
if anyone
again.
Disagrees, I will fight them. I will throat punch them.
Listen, we still have to do our thing.
Well, once I press stop, you don't hang up yet because it's got to download. And okay. We are going to... Since we started talking, I have an idea. But Janine, thank you so much. I adore you. And we'll see you soon.
Thank you.
Thanks for hanging with Janine and myself. She is so much fun and I adore this woman. I find her fascinating, inspiring, and spiritually energizing. I appreciate the time she gave to The Hang, and I can't wait to see more of Janine, whether it's on stage or just hanging out one day when our paths can cross. Take care, folks. The Hang is produced by Dori Beristein and Alan Seals from the Broadway Podcast Network. You can find me online at bpn.fm/The Hang. Don't forget, you can connect with me on Instagram and Twitter at Ramin Karimloo, on YouTube, A Roaming Iranian, or my Facebook page, Official Ramin Karimloo. Music for my podcast is by my friends and one of my favorite bands, The Dives. Please check them out at their website, thedivesmusic.com. That's thedivesmusic.com, where you can get to know them, hear their incredible music, get links to all their socials, and most importantly, their tour dates, where you can find out where you can see and hear them live. They are truly a great band, and they are phenomenal live. Check them out.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.